Hello, it's my pleasure today to meet with Dr. John Wilson, Director of Bereavement Services at York St. John University, and author of this wonderful book that I've just been reading, The Plain Guide to Grief. Welcome, John. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yes, I was a primary school teacher for 15 years, and then I was an education lecturer for another 8 years. And then for various reasons, I decided on a complete career swap and moved into counselling. And very soon after that, I started volunteering to do some bereavement work in a hospice. And then a paid job came along. I did that for 17 years. And learned all sorts, got involved in training volunteers in the service and so on, and learned a huge amount about grief, loss, and wrote a book for counsellors in 2013. And then, as Jane points out recently, published this book for clients. So it's been quite a long and fascinating career, and I'm really, really passionate about helping people in this field.
Oh, lovely. Thanks, John. One of the reasons I've asked you today, really, is that especially in light of the pandemic, I'm really aware that our care staff across the world are coping or trying to cope with caring for many, many people at the end of their lives, and through COVID that has sometimes been quite sudden. And really, I'm hoping we can offer them some sort of support and strategies around what they're having to deal with. Because of course, as we know, we don't just care in a vacuum. We have our own personal lives and with our own grief and various experience, whether that grief is sudden or expected. So I'm really keen that we can perhaps try and offer some sort of support to people at this stage. Could you tell us a bit about what grief and bereavement are really, and any strategies that could help any of the staff listening today?
Yeah, grief is a process, and I guess it's a process that never ends. You know, in the olden days, starting going back a long way to Freud in 1917, he suggested that we need to kind of let go, let go and move on of the memories of our loved ones and so on. And, you know, that idea endured really through most of the 20th century. And then towards the end, people began to realise that there were all sorts of ways of dealing with grief, and hardly any of them involved letting go and moving on. And so we kind of moved into a new era of grief research and teaching and writing about grief, which is more about hanging on to the memories and forming a new kind of bond with a person you've lost. And I think also it's important to think of grief as a process that never ends and that we never stop grieving. I for example, don't like the word healing. You know, we heal in a way, but we're left with scars, or if we break a bone, we're left with a scar on the bone and so on. And so sometimes, you know, where we then end up walking with a limp, or we end up with a permanent scar, we have to learn to live with that scar. We have to learn to adapt to it and so on. And grief is like that. And the more, you know, the closer you were to the person you've lost, the harder, more difficult the grief is. So I think a lot of it is about learning to live with the grief. And we certainly don't get over it. We certainly don't let go. We certainly don't move on.
That's interesting, actually, John, because I think this seems to be such a pressure to get over things.
Yes.
And still with that idea of moving on.
Yes.
But actually, I love that sort of metaphor, really, that of the scar. I think that's that's sort of helpful in itself, isn't it? That sort of allows people, doesn't it? About permission as well, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, and you can take the analogy a little bit further. There's a guy that I can't remember his first name, but he wrote some time ago, a long time ago now, about shells and skeletons. And you know, the idea is that if you break a bone, for a time you have your leg in a pot while it gets better. And you know, bereavement counselling can be like that kind of shell while you're in the counselling, but it's really about helping the person have a strong skeleton again, not staying permanently in the shell, because a shell restricts your movement, whereas a skeleton allows you to move, although it still leaves you vulnerable. So you know, it's quite a useful analogy to think of, you know, adapting, becoming strong again, not needing the support of a shell or a bubble that counselling provides.
Yeah, I like that. So you have that protective space for a while.
Yeah.
And to build up your strength, have that space, and then to
The other thing that I want to say to care staff is that. In my experience, a lot of your grief won't be recognised. It won't be recognised by relatives because they think you're there, you're doing a job, and they don't realise, I think, always how close you get to your residents, you know. And, you know, having worked in hospice for so long, you could always tell when a patient had died, if they were young and they'd left young children and so on, because the atmosphere in the building changed. You know, you could sense it in the air that the staff were grieving and they were all sad. And you know, I can't imagine what it's been like in care homes where there's been a lot of deaths, so that kind of level of sadness. So I really want to say to you, you know, that it's important that your grief is recognized. It's important that, you know, that relatives learn that, you know, you're grieving as well as them. And the other thing I'm aware of is that many care home staff have also lost people in the pandemic, so they're dealing with their family grief as well as their work grief. And certainly in with the work I've been doing on social media, I've met many people in caring roles that are grieving personal losses as well.
So do you think that's sort of the first step, is to actually identify that you are more than likely grieving? For a start, that's a big thing, isn't it, too? Because often in care, I know in my generation, it was we all had to be stoical, you know, put a strong face on things and get on. And actually, some people still manage to do that. I never did. I think. But so the fact that you're by you saying that you're more than likely to be grieving is going to surely help people recognize they may be having all sorts of emotions around this. So
yeah,
talk about the emotions perhaps.
I mean, one of the things that happens is that people mix up grief and depression. They're very, very similar, and sometimes chronic grief is successfully treated with antidepressants. Citalopram is a good one for working with grief. But the difference between grief and depression is that depression is this sort of constant low feeling. Grief comes in waves. So if you're sort of feeling up one minute and then really down the next, or you find yourself suddenly being tearful over things that, you know, puzzle you. Why am I being tearful about something coming on the radio or something coming on the telly? What's that about? And this grief coming in what this depressive feeling is coming in waves, that's very, very likely to be grief. And I do think there is something important about recognizing, admitting to yourself that this is grief.
And there's not a weakness in that, is there?
Absolutely not. And people talk about being strong. And I always discourage clients who talk about, I'm being strong. I say, well, you know, cast iron is strong. You know, they make manhole covers out of cast iron, but you drive a heavy truck over it and they crack. You know, it's not about strength, it's about resilience. And far more important to be resilient, and it's okay not to be okay. And if you let yourself feel, then you'll find yourself able to bounce back. But if you grit your teeth, you know, that's a recipe for panic attacks and all sorts, that because it's like a pressure cooker. Eventually, grief bursts out.
So it can actually impact and create sort of anxiety then, if it's not identified and not felt.
Yeah, it seems to. I mean, very, very, I was going to say very common, but fairly common in my clients are people that come for counselling because they've been having what they think of unexplained panic attacks. And where there's a loss, a bereavement involved, it's normally because they've been trying to be strong. And, you know, I think the kind of cortisol and the adrenaline kind of build up in the bloodstream, and then eventually something just tips over and there's a panic attack that follows. So I think that kind of holding it in, that is a, you get that slow stress drip that, yeah.
Mm. So it has a big impact on your body as well as your mind, isn't it? Yeah. So what can we do then, particularly, you know, I'm thinking of staff in hospitals, staff in, you know, people, like you say, we build up relationships very much when we're caring for people over time. What can staff do then to help them and their colleagues?
It's a difficult one, and I take your point, Jane, about how often nurses, people who wear uniforms very often try to be strong, try to be stoic and so on. And it seems to me really important that when you're feeling it, when you're feeling that you're not coping, that to be in a culture where it's okay to say so. I'll tell you a true story about when I started my job. In the hospice, I'd previously, you know, been a counselling student, and I'd worked with small numbers of people, small numbers of clients, and suddenly I was in this situation with all this loss, all this tragedy, and I began to think, I can't do this job. And I was aware that the person who had the job before me had only lasted a few weeks, and I can't do this. And I went to my line manager and I said, I'm struggling. And she listened, and it kind of broke the spell. I just needed to say that it wasn't as easy as I thought it was going to be. She listened. She's still a friend, although many years later. And I think that's the important thing, is if you're feeling it, find colleagues that you can trust and share it. And the chances are that they will share it back. And really important for line managers to listen and to recognise. And sometimes people just need to say it. They just need to know that other people are feeling it as well. They just need to know there's people that care. And, you know, what's been really difficult, I think, at the moment has been, the social distancing. But certainly when I worked in the hospice and was, struggling with some clients, you know, I could come out of the counselling session and I could go to any of my colleagues and say, I just need a hug, because that was, you know, and I'm a great believer in touch and in hugs. You know, it makes so much difference. And I'm sure we release all sorts of feel-good hormones, won't we? When we hug and when we touch and when we talk and when people listen. So we need to develop workplace cultures where it's okay not to be okay, where it's okay to say how you feel, and it's important that colleagues listen. And when we develop that culture, I'm sure that helps.
Do you think, so in a way, it would be really helpful within education, wouldn't it? You know, when you're thinking of anyone sort of nursing or any sort of health or social care education, this should be brought into the curriculum, really, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
So that we can change the cultures over time.
Yeah, because I think, I'm sure that there are times when there's real kind of burnout in that kind of setting. And it's really important that that line managers and everybody's colleague really just look out for the early signs, you know, of people making mistakes or flippant remarks, uncaring remarks, and so on. That they're all signs of those, you know, they're early signs of burnout, you know, absenteeism, and so that they're all signs that people really need to be watched very carefully and supported. And that kind of macho cultures of just getting on with it come to an end.
Yeah, I totally agree there, having lived that experience a lot in my career. So the big first thing really is to identify those feelings. Don't ignore them.
Yeah.
And find someone you feel safe with to talk to, really. And like you say, more often than not, they're likely to be feeling it themselves. So that feeling of you're not alone is huge, isn't it, really?
Yes. Yeah.
Would you recommend that they perhaps seek, at what stage do you think, perhaps, and I know this is different for everyone, but at what stage do you think people should seek perhaps professional help?
Are we talking about care staff, grieving relatives, or grieving residents?
I think for this, at the moment today, for care staff.
That are grieving residents.
Yes, or if, well, it's a mix, isn't it? They might be grieving residents, but they also might have personal.
Most people, well, I say most people, at least 50% of people don't need counselling at all. It's overhyped, the need for counselling. So most people manage grief okay on their own, just talking to friends. They don't need professional support. A small number might be helped by counselling, but the percentage of people that need it, probably around about 10-15% at the most. And the sadness is that a lot of those never come for counselling because they try and bottle it up and make things worse. Mm-hmm. So counselling really is a last resort. And I think to recognise the kind of uniqueness of what you're going through, to recognise that it's important to follow your instincts. You know, most people know how to grieve, but well-meaning friends and colleagues and badly written books, and they kind of convince you that, you know, you should be seeking professional help. But most people don't need it, and most people have got really good instincts if they know to, you know, how to relax, how to take time out, how to admit to themselves that sometimes need a good cry, and so on. So it's only if things really endure for a long time, 6 months or more, that it may be worth just talking to a counsellor, but choosing somebody that is a bereavement specialist rather than somebody that is a generalist counsellor, because it's, you know, it's quite a specialist field.
Yeah, I can imagine that, actually. It's very, very different, isn't it? Mm. So I'm going to sort of do a little plug of your book now, because I've been reading this, and actually as a nurse who has experienced a lot of grief when caring in care homes particularly, but also in hospitals, caring for people who've died suddenly in front of me, and but also having experienced grief in my personal life, as we all do, this is an excellent book. And we're going to put it on the resources section of the training platform, because it's written so, I don't mean to sound this insulting, but it's written so simply.
Yeah,
I don't mean to say that to sound like an insult, but it's just so beautifully written, because it's, you know, John, like myself, we know that when we're working with people who may be massively stressed, they can't concentrate, you can't take a lot in. So, it's just a beautiful book. And I think all care staff should have this, actually. So it'll be on our resources section. And I don't know if there's anything else you think you'd like to add, John, at all. I think what's really important is that we identify we might be grieving, and we all admit that and support each other.
Yeah, if you do get hold of the book, I mean, it's available as an ebook as well for people that tend not to buy print books. But there's a section in there about working out whether or not you do need counselling. That might be quite useful to people. And as Jane says, yes, it's complex ideas written simply. And in large print, few words on a page, all done very, very deliberately, because people do find it difficult to concentrate. And certainly all the people have reviewed it on Amazon have said that that's its most important feature, that low reading age, when you can't concentrate, a few words on a page, short sentences, to make it readable.
Yeah, and I agree there definitely, because, you know, after a shift, the last thing you're probably going to think, oh, the last thing I'm going to want to do is read about it. But actually, it's such a gentle, you know, a gentle sort of moment. You could just sit. And then we go to the rest of the wellbeing hub that we have, where we've got all sorts of, like John mentioned, be kind to yourself. And, you know, we've got some mindfulness videos and podcasts and things. So it is about self-care, and it is about, we have care plans for patients, for residents, but we don't have care plans for ourselves, you know, often. And I think this is where I think it's time to make that change. So thank you very much, John. Really appreciate your time today. And we'll hopefully speak again soon.
Thank you.